Welcome to the Digital Story Show, new tools for the creative mind. The Digital Story Show takes you inside with tips for the creative pursuit of photography, music, video, hardware, software, techniques, and hacks. You'll soon find yourself thinking less about buttons and menus and more about expressing the artist inside us all. Now the Digital Story Show with Derek Story.
July 17th, 2007, The Digital Story Show with Derek Story. Today's topic, report from Microsoft's Pro Photography Summit in Redmond, Washington. Welcome back to another edition of The Digital Story. I'm going to tell you a little bit about what I was up to last week up in Redmond. That's right, I was invited to speak at the Microsoft Pro Photography Summit, and this was quite an interesting event. Basically, had about 450 people come from all over the U.S. and actually different parts of the world. We had photographers, we had camera manufacturers, we had software people, we had folks that were involved with the legal aspects of photography, we had associations, we had educators, the whole deal. The idea was, with this summit, was to get everyone together and basically talk about the important issues related to photography right now. Some of the folks that were involved, just to give you an idea here, in the photographer camp, we had folks like Colin Finley, we had Michael Greco, we had Vincent LaForêt, we had some guys that are just like regular photographers, such as myself. And then in the association part of it, you know, the different associations that represent photography or are associated with the imaging arts, we had folks like PPA, NANPA, WPPI, ASMP, and we even had folks there from the U.S. Copyright Office, which I thought was rather interesting and is one of the topics that I'll talk a little bit about today. From the company point of view, we had Canon there, Nikon was there, Hasselblad was there, Adobe, Microsoft, iStock Photo, and then a number of independent companies that had different sort of services, such as folks like from Photo Shelter that gave you an online way to store your images and share them with other folks. So it was a good mix. And then a lot, and these were mainly speakers here that I'm talking about. And then in the audience, not only did we have all the folks that were speakers, so we had a very kind of diverse audience, but then we had a ton of photographers in the audience. Most of them, in my opinion, were seasoned veterans, were folks that have been in the business for a while, which I think really played itself out over the course of the summit. And I'm going to touch on that a little bit too when I talk about some of the big issues that surfaced during those discussions. So let me sort of set the stage for you. This was the first time I had been at this kind of event at Microsoft. The last Pro Photo Summit was last year, and it was the first one, and I was on a different assignment when it happened, and I wasn't able to go. So this was my first Pro Photography Summit. And basically, we were, you know, housed in hotels around Microsoft. We didn't stay on campus. And then we were shuttled in to their executive briefing area every morning. You know, we'd have the usual sort of coffee and lots of carbs and fruit kind of thing before the event got started. Now, going into the executive briefing area or the conference area, as they called it, this was really quite interesting. It's a very large room. It probably seated about 500 or so, and everybody, had their kind of their own space, and it was tiered upwards. So it was like an amphitheater with a very nice stage, very well lit stage, and then it had big screens on both sides of the stage. And nice bright screens with, you know, accurate color. All the images looked very nice on the screens. The audio was quite good, too, whether people were holding microphones or they had, you know, lapel mic or whatever. Now, for those of us that were sitting in the audience, we had like a nice kind of a writing area in front of us. and we had our own power outlets, which was really cool. And we also had our own speaker. So not only did you have the big speakers in the room echoing, you know, all the discussions, you also had your own little personal speaker, which I thought was kind of cute, and a light, and then a very comfortable chair that tilted back and so forth. So you could, you know, literally last the whole day because the seating was pretty nice, pretty comfy. Now, a lot of folks brought their computers and, you know, would check email and so forth and do some work off and on over the course of the day. I really didn't feel like lugging my computer around, and actually I'm doing this experiment because I want to travel a little bit lighter when I'm on these events. So in one pocket I had my compact camera, my Canon SD700IS, which is sort of my companion wherever I go, and I was able to both take pictures and record movies with it, which I, you know, love doing. And then in my other pocket I had an iPhone. And I have one of the new iPhones, and I have it set up so I can get both my personal and my business email on the iPhone. I have web connectivity. They had open Wi-Fi there in the conference center, so I could, you know, use the Wi-Fi when I wanted, or I could use AT&T's Edge network. And then, of course, I had my book that they gave me, which you know, had all the speaker information and, you know, the agenda for each day and places to take notes and so forth. And that was it. So, and I actually did quite well just having those three things. The nice thing about it was that after the day was over, and if we were going to go out to dinner or something, I didn't have to shuttle back to my room to drop a bunch of stuff off, or I didn't have to schlep it all around with me. And I just felt sort of light and portable and, you know, able to just go with the flow. This is something that I think I'm going to do more of. The laptop's great for working in the hotel room, but I'm really tired of carrying it around, and I think the iPhone is going to now be my substitute for the laptop on most things that I have to do. One of the first discussions that we had had to do with copyright and what's known as orphaned works. And if you're not familiar with orphan works, this is something, if I bring nothing else back from the summit, you knowing about this is probably worth listening to this podcast alone. Basically, what orphan works are is that there's a lot of imagery out there on the internet right now. There's a lot of our pictures floating around. And what happens a lot of times is that even if we include copyright material and contact information in the metadata with the image, a lot of times that information gets stripped out, and not necessarily intentionally. There, Photoshop sometimes will strip things out if you save things a certain way, such as save for web. Sometimes certain converters and so forth will strip things out. And as people use our images or share them or whatever, our name can get separated from the photo itself. So where the whole orphan works comes in is that if somebody sees an image that they want to use, they see it on Flickr, they see it, you know, just any old place. Probably Flickr isn't a good example because almost always on Flickr there'll be a person tied to it. But let's say they see it on a web page or somewhere, a catalog page, an ad or something, and the photographer isn't associated with the image. So that work then is quote-unquote an orphaned work. In other words, the creator has been separated from the image itself. Now, what's going through Congress right now is they're discussing, well, how do we handle that sort of thing? And, you know, do we define it? Whereas if a person who wants to use an image makes a legitimate attempt at finding the content creator, the photographer, and doesn't find the photographer, you know, by doing a legitimate search, then, you know, what can happen? Can the person just go ahead and use that photo without finding the photographer and crediting and paying for the image? Or is the photo not usable at all? unless you actually find the content creator. And they're wrestling with all of these issues. And there's, you know, interesting arguments and aspects to both sides of it. I mean, on one side, a lot of these photographs are part of our culture. And we don't want, you know, to prevent people from being able to use images, icons of our culture that represent everyday life just because they can't find the photographer. On the other hand, we don't want, let's say, a company use one of the images and make a lot of money off it, use it as part of an ad campaign or put it on a product or something. Say that they made, you know, an attempt to find a photographer, but it just didn't work out, and then never have to pay the person who took that photo for using that image. So, you know, there's a lot of things to consider here, and I think it's very difficult to be hard line one way or the other. What you really need to do is find the best solution that sort of works for everyone. And as you can imagine, with a bunch of photographers in the room, this became a rather animated discussion. Generally speaking, the photographers that were there at the summit, which, you know, in my opinion, were older and had been in the business longer, seemed to take a pretty hard line on Orphan Works, which is, hey, you know, if you can't find the photographer, you know, sort of tough noogies, especially if it's going to be used for any sort of commercial application. Now, the folks at the Copyright Office and so forth obviously didn't have a personal stake in this. They weren't photographers. They weren't content creators. And were a little bit more detached from the issue and saying, well, you know, we really need to find a middle ground. We really need to sort of define, you know, what a legitimate search is and, you know, the things that you have to do. And we also at some point have to let people use stuff if they really can't find the person who created it. I think the main thing to do is that if you're a publishing photographer, if you have images out there, I would go over to one of the sites that represent photographers, possibly ASMP. I know they have a good paper up right now. You know, it's called An Urgent Call for Your Action on Orphan Works. Their website's www.asmp.org. And you might want to go over and just sort of read up on this issue and decide for yourself where you stand on it. And then also, since nothing has been truly decided yet, you know, we're sort of in the balance right now. If you do end up having a strong opinion about it, you might want to share it with your representative and so forth so that your voice can be heard. And also, I think this is a good argument for looking at the various photography organizations out there, especially ASMP and PPA, I think, are, you know, two that I like a lot. I'm actually a member of PPA. And read up on their sites about these issues, learn a little bit more, and then just make sure that if there is something that's important to you that you know about it, so you can add your voice to the conversation and not just, you know, 3-4 years up the road go, oh, I didn't know that was going on. I didn't know that was happening at all. Nobody told me. So you've heard it here. Orphaned Works is a hot topic right now. It's probably one of the hotter topics at the summit, and it's really worth learning a little bit about. Another interesting discussion was about the business of photography. And I thought, again, that the audience really sort of represented or set the tone for this. But it went basically like this. Where the discussion went to was that, you know, we've been making our living for a long time as photographers. We deliver a quality product. We know what we're doing. We're responsible. Yet we have costs associated with the kind of work that we do. And I think a lot of photographers are feeling resentful, especially the established photographers, of new photographers that are coming in, the weekend warriors, the folks, as they said, you know, that were carrying around a digital rebel and starting to do weddings and so forth with that camera. I thought this was fascinating discussion. For one thing, even though I'm a photographer as part of my living and in many different ways, I also carry a digital Rebel too, even though I have other cameras. I have a Canon 5D and so forth for assignment. But I'm one of those people that actually really like, you know, the newer, lighter digital SLRs and the compact cameras. And I also have a certain amount of empathy for people that are coming into the business. In fact, I spend a lot of my time helping people break into the business. I always make sure that I have photo assistants for my weddings and other types of jobs, and I like to give people a chance. A lot of times, people who become my assistants are, you know, or the second shooters are people that were in my workshops or that I met at the junior college while teaching. And I also obviously run The Digital Story, which is a virtual camera club really designed to help people who have a passion for photography get better at it, with the hope, you know, if they want to make money at photography, they should be able to. They should be able to. And it doesn't mean that anyone has to become a full-blown professional. It can be money on the side to help you pay for equipment or at, you know, whatever level you want. So here, as an educator, as a person who spends a lot of time teaching photography and help bringing people up, I thought it was interesting that there was a fair amount of resentment for new people coming in unless they came in through the formal channels, unless they came in through a full-blown photography program and they were taught all the right ways to do things and they had classes on business. And, you know, they charged the appropriate amount and they didn't come in and undercut the existing pros. Now, at the same time, and this is why it was so interesting for me, at the same time, I'm a guy who has seen my wedding business in the last 18 months. I've seen the bottom fall right out on my wedding business. The amount of cold calls that I get, folks either through the Yellow Pages or through my website and through the normal channels where I usually just had a lot of work come in years past, that has dried up to an incredibly small amount. The referrals, of course, still hang in there well, but the amount of new people coming into the pool, into the referral pool, has really shrank a lot. And this is a phenomenon that, as I talk to other photographers, I talk to a lot of photographers up at the summit about this, and they're all saying the same thing, and it all started about the same time, which is, of course, when, you know, what we're tying it to, you know, our best guess is that this phenomenon is tied to these more affordable cameras becoming more widespread. So what happens is someone can get a Nikon D40, a Digital Rebel, whatever, get a lens or two, and say that they can shoot weddings and probably do a pretty good job if they know what they're doing. So as professionals, we're seeing a lot of our business be dispersed, you know, go different directions, being shared among people who are newer to the business and who are obviously charging less than we are too. That, and of course, this is one of the big complaints. These people come in, they don't know what they're doing. They don't even know how to charge for these things. And customers are going, well, do I pay, you know, $3,000 or $4,000 for this guy who's been in business for a while? Or, you know, do I, you know, go with this person who's only charging, you know, $300 or $400. And, you know, then they'll deliver the images to me on CD and it's real easy. And I can just make whatever prints I want and on and on and on. You can imagine that this was also quite the spirited discussion. My approach, and I was actually on stage for one of these panel discussions called The Educated Photographer. My point was simply this, that as photographers and as professional photographers, we have to keep changing with the times. In other words, the business model that I had 3 or 4 years ago clearly isn't going to work today. And all I have to do is look at my year-end books that I prepare for Uncle Sam and see that my revenue income, the money coming into my business is coming from a lot of different places than it was 3 or 4 years ago. 3 or 4 years ago, weddings and portraits made up about half of my income. As a photographer, these days it's down to around 20%. I'm making it up by publishing pictures in other ways, by doing more corporate work, by writing more for magazines, by writing more for books, by teaching more, and all the different things that I can do, you know, different ways that I can apply my skills so that I can still keep my revenue up, but not necessarily the same way that I did before. That was my message, and it wasn't, I have to say, at least publicly, wildly received. I don't think people like hearing that, you know, you have to adapt and change your business model to the times. But it was interesting. Then privately, at breaks, at the reception, when I go out to dinner, all, you know, all these different places where we were just able to talk among ourselves, a lot of people came up to me and said, well, I really appreciated what you said. So this is another interesting aspect. Now, you may be, as you listen to this, you could be, you know, anywhere along this continuum. You could be someone that's brand new with a brand new digital SLR and thinking about, boy, I'd love to, you know, use this new tool to make a little bit of money to apply my skills so maybe I could buy some lenses or something, all the way to where you may be someone that's run a photography business for years and years and years. And I think my message to everyone here is that these are interesting things for us to talk about among ourselves. And I think at the end of the day, what's important to me is that regardless of where you are, that you work to become the best photographer that you can be at whatever stage you're at, that you're honest with people about your skills and about your abilities that you work with, and that you try to be a good business person and a good photographer in the photography community and just be upfront. And I think from there, if we all sort of start at that place, then I think we have a lot of room to move forward. And I think the one thing that does bother me are people who don't have experience and who present themselves as seasoned pros. I have people all the time take pictures off my site, present them to potential clients as their own shots and not credit me, you know, say, well, these are the kind of shots that I can deliver. And, you know, it's so funny. I have potential clients for these other photographers contact me and go, you know, is this your shot? This person was presenting, but there's a red flag that went up and I did a little digging around and it looks like you took this shot, not this other person. And that is happening more and more. So just be honest, be straightforward, do the best you can, get better. And I think then that, you know, together we can really kind of move this thing forward. But at the same time, you know, I want people who love photography to be able to do it for part of their living. And, you know, God bless them. If they can do it for all of their living, so be it. You know, it's a lot of hard work, but I mean, that's what we're all about here. We love photography, and there's nothing better than doing something you absolutely love for your living. There's just one other panel discussion I want to touch on real quickly, and then we'll get to our own virtual camera club business. But we did have some Hollywood stars take the stage. Tim Daly, Joey Pants, some other folks. And they talked about being on the receiving end of photography and about how they felt about, you know, images of them being used for photographer gain and so forth. And it was fun because, I mean, here we had these colorful personalities on stage and stuff. And basically, you know, what they're saying is that, you know, if you profit from taking a picture of us, it would be nice if you gave us a piece of the action. And, you know, that's cool. But, the thing about it is there were all sorts of ramifications to this. Well, if it's a setup job set up by your PR person and so forth, and then that's not really, you know, if we're taking a picture for you to use for something, then we're not really going to, you know, feel the need to give you a piece of the action if we also use one of those pictures from that shoot for something else. And, you know, there's lots of interesting discussion going back and forth about that. They talked about the invasion of privacy. And the photographers would counter about, well, you're public figures. And if you're out in public, you know, then, you know, we can take your picture. And no real, you know, I can't wrap that up for you and give you, you know, what the final analysis was on that. But you can imagine that that was a fairly interesting discussion. And it did add a little more juice to the day. All right. So anyway, that just gives you a feel for some of the topics that were happening at this Microsoft Pro Photography Summit. They will be having another one next year. It's an invitation-only event. If I get to go again next year, which I think I will, I'll make sure that I report back, especially on some of these things, such as the copyright laws that are pending, the Orphan Works stuff, and then also just sort of an update on what's happening in the business as a whole. I hope you sort of enjoyed this update. It saved you a trip up to Seattle, and it was kind of warm that week. Got up to around the 90s, so wasn't actually the best time to be in Seattle. All right, let's talk a little bit about, real quickly, Virtual Camera Club Business. The photo assignment for this month is pattern. And I think it's a fun one. Gosh, images are coming in already, and they're really cool. This is going to be an excellent gallery. And remember about pattern. Pattern is interesting to me in two ways. When you have very good repetition, and then, of course, when you have repetition that's interrupted also. So keep that in mind. Keep your eyes peeled while you're out walking around. Send in your best image for pattern, because I think this is going to be a lovely, lovely gallery. Don't forget our Flickr public group for the digital story. And if you're not participating, if you're not sharing your photos or participating in the discussions there, I encourage you to do that. You can get to it from the digital story. Just go to our member photo gallery page, and there's all the information about the Flickr public group. And of course, when you contribute to the Flickr public group, when you send a photo up to it, those photos also appear on our member gallery on the digital story. Grab shots, keep them rolling in. Big thanks to our sponsors, the folks over at Photomagico, who make the best slideshow software in the world that happens to run on a Mac, and also Expo Imaging, the makers of Expo Disc, the best way also to use your custom white balance. That's a wrap for this week. I hope you enjoyed the report from Redmond, California. We'll get back to some photography technique possibly next week. Until then, go out there and take some pictures, and I'll see you then. Bye-bye now.
Your questions and comments, email them to questions@thedigitalstory.com. For show notes, web blogs, and informative articles, visit www.thedigitalstory.com. We'll see you next time on The Digital Story.